are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How do I pronounce your name?
Ty.
Just like T. I thought so. I just didn't want to try.
Easy to butcher.
I like your setup. I was hoping to see something like that.
Oh, good.
Good, good. How?
Like reading your book, Oppenheimer and Avatar. Good stuff.
Yeah. My world versus your world, right? So it's good. You're raised in California?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where again?
So Stockton, California is kind of northern California, east of San Francisco, south of Sacramento.
Okay. I'll be sure to come and visit there. I go to California quite often, and sometimes San Francisco, sometimes San Jose. So if I'm there, I'll probably pop in just to check out your facility. It looks fantastic in pictures. I know, obviously, the background as well.
Yeah, you're welcome to come up.
Awesome.
Spin you around.
That's awesome. Well, good to have you. Thank you so much for your work in on Masters of the Year. I'm not sure if you had a chance to see the most recent one episode that we did with the VFX supervisor, Stephen Rosenbaum. Did you get a chance to see that at all or hear it?
Yeah, and we're still kind of laughing about that. That was really good. Stephen's a great guy. He helped me out a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I learned about you, because he mentioned it in the podcast that how, you know, his little conversation with you about the engines and not getting fire and the front of the plane not getting fire and all that. So I thought maybe I should talk to you and get just some insight about your involvement. So it's really good to have you, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Great. So just tell me about your background before we even get on to Masters of the Year. How did you get involved in what you do now, having a place where you'd fly B-17s and your love for the aircraft or planes in general?
It all started with my parents. My mom was an Army nurse in World War II in the Pacific, and okay. My dad was also in the Pacific. He was a B-29 Navigator. So I've always had an interest in World War II stuff, and you know, built model airplanes, World War II airplanes as a kid with my dad. And he would build them, and we had a lot of fun together. And I started collecting things. I remember as a kid going to a flea market, and there was an instrument out of a P-47. I bought it at a flea market, brought it home, and studied it and analyzed it. My dad found a Norden bomb sight disassembled at some garage sale and gave it to me, and I put the thing back together. So, yeah, I started out as a kind of World War II geek from an early age, I suppose. And then I was struggling a little bit in high school, and my dad said that if I could get a B grade point average, that he'd give me flying lessons, and so that was the best deal I've ever made. and started flying. My dad actually started flying too. He had soloed back in World War II, but hadn't really flown an aircraft since. So he and I started flying together, and that was a lot of fun. And then yeah, just kept collecting things, and that bomb sight that he gave me, I reassembled, put it in, or gave it to the Peame Air Museum. It's in the nose of their B-29 on display, and just been collecting stuff ever since. My dad and I collected a lot of things, and it was a lot of fun. That's kind of pretty much how it started. Then went to San Jose State, got a degree in aeronautics, and became a flight instructor and started flying that way, or flying and building up hours. And at one point I was at the crossroads, either go and do the airline career or start a business based on the Twin Beach. My dad got me a Christmas gift one year, which is a gun turret in a crate, new old stock turret. And it was it said turret training type A-8 for model AT-11 aircraft. And I said, Dad, what's an AT-11? He says, oh, we buzzed the Japanese on the island of Rota in one of those. And he showed me a picture. And so I had to find an airplane to go with my gun turret. And that's what started the Twin Beach kind of thing. And then at San Jose State, they had a Twin Beach that was an AT-11 at one time. I ended up buying that for $250 and started the Twin Beach thing. And so that crossroads, I either continue with the Twin Beach thing or go off and do the airline career. So I chose the vow of poverty in aviation and been working on Twin Beaches ever since. And old World War II airplanes too.
Wow, that's awesome. What was the plane that your dad first flew you in when when he asked you to get a B grade? And which plane was it?
Cessna 172. So Stanford Flying Club, he and I went and joined Stanford Flying Club and started flying Cessna 172s, where we got our private license with them.
Okay. And are you originally from California?
Yeah, born in Anaheim and
Okay.
grew up in the Bay Area, so Los Altos Hills, grew up there. And then when it was tough to find a hangar in the Bay Area, it's really expensive and long waits, so
Yeah.
finding a hangar out here in Stockton, and then we commute out here a bunch. And then after my parents passed away, then I ended up moving out here, live in Manteca, and have a shop here at Stockton and next door. And then this is what we call the museum hangar, where we've got the World War II stuff on display.
And how
So
long have you had them? Sorry, go on, please. Go on.
our business next door is Vintage Aircraft, where we fix up B-18s and do warbird stuff. And just have a shop there. And my daughter is our office manager, and we have Ricky's our one of our techs. He's been with us for over 20 years. So it's a little small kind of family business sort of thing.
Oh, that's sweet. That's awesome. That's really cool. And the museum, when did it start?
It goes way back from the collecting stuff. So I think it's been going for, I think, about 18 years now. And yeah, the collection's kind of been growing steadily over time. And the collection's kind of mostly been concentrating on the air and ground crew, so what they have. And eventually we started doing bomber camp thing, where we put all of it to work and put it to use. And yeah, I appreciate the shout out that Stephen gave on that about bomber camp. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. So it's fun to, I like to bring the equipment to life, whether it's a bomb site, a Norden bomb site, or the gun turrets and things, and make them work. So people can see, hear, and smell, and feel what it's like, with this equipment does. And that's what's fun about bomber camp. We bring it all together with a flying B-17. So yeah, it's a lot
That's
of fun. I
awesome.
love
I
showing
bet.
people, yeah, the change in technology through World War II, like what you see in Masters of the Air, with simple ring and bead, iron sights, and then the gunner has to do all the deflection and things. Then at the end of the war, we had computer controlled turrets that would compensate for lead and acceleration and temperature and out pressure altitude, and even radar guided stuff. It's amazing just the technological advancements through that, the 4 short years of World War II.
That's great. That's super cool. I mean, I it's when I was a kid, before I decided that I wanted to make films for a living, I had two passion loves. And first was pilot. I wanted to be a pilot. You know, as a kid, every boy wants to fly a plane with those toys and all that. And then I wanted to be an astronomer. But I still remember having that pilot obsession and just being able to fly a plane was I still remember the feeling. So it's I can totally imagine what you do and your family does and your family has been doing, which is incredible. It's super awesome.
Yeah, I still remember as a kid when we would drive up San Francisco Airport to pick somebody up or whatever, we'd park at the end of the runway. And I still remember there's a big giant TWA L-1011 that's taxiing by. And I'm looking up, holding on a chain link fence, looking up there. And the co-pilot, looks down and waves at me. It's like, oh man, that was the coolest thing. And so if I'm ever taxiing around an airplane, see a kid there, I always wave to, return the favor. But that, really had an impact. It was pretty good.
It's amazing how those little things have a big impact, right? Like those little moments in your life can
Yeah.
just completely change the compass of where you want to go in life and where you want to head. That's awesome. You got involved into before Master of the Year, you've done some consulting work for films in general, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we've done a few things, real small stuff, nothing special. We've done a few TV things and series type stuff, and one movie with Nicolas Cage, USS Indianapolis, Men of Courage.
Okay.
Flying scenes. We got our PB2 flying, our museum's PB2 flying for that, and that was a lot of fun. But I mean, it's just drop in the bucket. I mean, nothing compares to Masters and the scope and magnitude. And I'm not a movie guy. I'm an airplane guy. And so yeah, it was pretty incredible. That's for sure. Real honor. I'm very thankful for the opportunity.
How did that, do you remember how that came about, like who approached you or when were you approached? If you can tell me that story from beginning to end, how that unfolded, that'd be super.
Yeah, years back when I first heard about this, I wrote in emails to every email address I could come up with saying, pick me, but it was probably a 10,000 other folks doing the same thing. So nothing came of that. But I think it's through Bomber Camp. So Michael Foley, who's one of the leading 100th Bomb Group historians, I think he suggested me because of Bomber Camp to try and train the actors. And Steven Rosenbaum also says that he put in a good pitch for me as well. I got an email from Michael Foley asking if I'd be interested, and I said, sure, absolutely. And so then I got a conference call with Dale Dye was there, and a lot of the guys, and they were asking questions and things, and they said, well, yeah, sounds like we'll give you a shot. So I was to go out for a 2 week stint to well, initially they were actually talking about maybe having the actors come to us to a bomber camp kind of thing. And I explained to them that, bomber camp is not a, we don't have a B-17 here. We're using Collins airplanes, and now we're using Erickson's airplane when they were in the area, because we just can't afford to bring him in from, across states and stuff.
Sure.
So that wasn't going to work out. And so they decided to bring me out there. So I went out for a 2 week stint to start teaching the actors, and we did. We kind of set things up. Dave Littleton has a cockpit that he made in his garage over 20 plus years with all real parts, and that was sitting on the floor. So we used that mostly for our flight training. And I started working with the actors, and it was interesting because I thought that the kids would have had like flight simulator experience or some kind of gaming thing. They have some kind of basic background maybe in flying, but not a single one of them did. And so I had to sit them down in a chair and have them pretend that they're holding a control yoke, and then teach them how the controls work in the airplane. When you move this, the ailerons, and that's how you bank, and how to use your feet in coordination with your hands, because these tailwheel airplanes are heavy with your feet. You're mostly flying with your feet. And how to just do all the basics. And then once we did that, I got him in the cockpit and started going and teaching him more, like, okay, here are the throttles, here are the propeller controls, what that kind of stuff does, in as straightforward terms as possible, without overloading them too much. And they did really well. Dave's cockpit was great to wait for that. And then about the 2 weeks was just about up. And so I was calling folks saying, hey, getting ready to go. I'm heading back, because I had reservations going back. They said, oh no, they decided you're staying. Like, nobody asked me. It's that was me. So I'm saying, say, yeah, you're gonna stay for the filming. I said, okay. So maybe we should talk about that a little bit, because I'd left the shop, and Sydney and Rick are taking care of things, and I want to be, they want me for filming, which was, I think, at the time 6 months. But that's gonna be a chore, but I'd like to. And so we worked it out, and so I stayed for filming, and thankfully Ricky and Sydney took care of the shop while I was gone, and I ended up being there for 9 months of filming. So yeah, it worked out really well. The job I had initially was just training actors, but I had people from all different departments coming and asking me questions, and what about this? And it was really fun. I almost think that, doing the teaching the actors was ended up being, a smaller portion of all the different things I was doing, working with, all the different departments on lots of different subjects. But it was a lot of fun, because they initially want someone to do the pilot training, and they said, well, we need somebody to teach the bombardiers and the navigators and gunners and radio operators. I said, well, I can do all of that stuff if you want. And so I ended up doing all of that, sitting down with Crosby, teaching navigation, because my dad was a navigator, so I had all of his gear, and I brought a lot of
Right.
that out and set it out to teach him how to use the things. Megan and graphics made me a bunch of charts, the World War II charts that they were going to use. And so we ended up plotting all the routes that they took on each of the missions, and then using that, in the navigation part. Let's say, at a certain scene he's going to be at a certain point, so we'll have the nav logs filled out to a certain point, and he'll be have lines on the charts to a certain place, and all that. So then same with radio operators, setting them up with their log sheets, and bombardiers, teaching them how to use the Norden and look like you're using the Norden, all that stuff. And the kids did great. They were so sharp. It was really neat. Especially Austin and Callum. They did an amazing job. They really wanted to learn, and yeah, it was really, really fun working with them.
That's cool. You know, it's one thing that you have a museum, that you're running that and all that, which is great. It's another thing to work on a film, which is great too, but teaching is an art and a skill, and it requires a lot of patience as well. Was that somewhat challenging to you at all, or was that some very natural fit in your, as to who you are, to be able to teach these kids who have nothing to, don't know anything about the planes or how the aviation works? Was that, how was that experience like?
Yeah, I guess I relied a lot on my experience as a flight instructor, because as a flight instructor, a lot of times
Okay.
I had one guy that just was driving down the freeway by San Francisco Airport, saw a 747, and decided right then and there he wanted to be a pilot. Turns around, drives out to the airport, and walks in the door. So somebody who, that's an extreme, who's never thought about flying before, and then walks in the door like, yeah, teach me to fly. So yeah, you have to have a lot of patience for that kind of thing. Then there's the other type of student that comes in, it has lifelong passion, always wanted to learn, and they're a little bit easier. But yeah, of course, some students and some actors are more challenging than others. But some of them, they had that thirst for knowledge, and they actually did, studying outside of class. And I had a bunch of study materials posted online, gave them links to that stuff so that they can learn about the bombardier navigation, all that kind of stuff. And I think a lot of them really paid attention to that and studied. Some others didn't so much. So yeah, it was a challenge. Everybody's different in learning, but you have to be patient and talk them through that. And then there's changes too when the director comes down and they're looking at what we're doing, kind of preparing for a scene, and then they want to change things around. And so it's yeah, again, it was nice. The kids were young and enthusiastic, and even some of the actors are the guys in the background too. And again, I apologize, I'm not a movie
Extra
guy.
extras, extras.
So yeah, a lot of those guys were very interested and excited as well. So it was really neat to work with them. But I get some of the craziest questions, and it was really fun to answer them and help them out. Some of them, wasn't movie related. They just like were interested in what they were doing and wanted to learn more. And yeah, I really liked that a lot too. And doing it here. We have kids come through, or we go to an air show and have a bunch of kids come through. We put them in the airplane up in the cockpit and let them play, and keep hoping that that will spark an interest in the kids. And we've got a bunch of them over the years. Several kids we actually had in our shop who started out sweeping the floor and helping out that way, and then volunteering on the museum's airplane, and we get them flying. And we have two of them there. One's a P-8 Poseidon patrol bomber pilot, and another one just got signed up with Southwest Airlines. So a lot, that's the best part really, is teaching these kids and seeing what they end up doing. And like with Masters, it gives them a healthy respect for what these guys did in World War II, which is pretty special.
Yeah. What was this is like a two-part question, and you can answer in whichever order you like. What was the most, is there a question that you remember from anybody, and you don't have to name names, that was like, wow, I don't know the answer to this, or I don't know this an I don't know the answer of this well enough, if there was something like that. If not, that's okay. Number two, what did you learn in the world of film that you had no idea transpired behind the cameras and behind the scenes?
Yeah, I remember one guy saying, as soon as you're involved in a production like this, you're never going to look at a movie the same way. And it's true. I'm looking at a shot and just thinking of all the people that are around behind and all the stuff that's going on and lighting and everything. So yeah, that definitely had an effect. But yeah, a lot of questions came up. I had a knowledge and been studying this since I was a kid, but so much stuff came up on set. And yeah, I got questions, a lot of questions that I didn't have an answer to. But I also have a good library. I had all of my files, digital files, were with me, so I could go and look and find out. So I was able to answer the questions to the best of my ability. But sometimes, like Jessica, she's one of the main researchers. A sharp kid with a brain that just wouldn't quit. I mean, she could pull facts out like amazing stuff. But she had questions, and so we spent a lot of time together trying to work out stuff like radio procedures. So in the I ended up going, well, one of the problems was during COVID, a lot of the big archives were all shut down. And so they had information coming from people in the States, but you know, that their mission reports were 5 or 6 generations old. Sometimes the pictures were just horrible, or you couldn't read some of the text. And the National Archives in the UK opened up, and I actually went there the first weekend. I'd spend weekends there pulling up stuff, and they had the original files for all of these things. And that's one of the things I learned too. I had no idea. The
Wow.
RAF built the airfields, and then they had a ceremony, turned them over to the Army Air Forces, but they kept a contingent there to help in air traffic control and administration and all sorts of things. And these guys made reports and sent those reports in. And these are the reports I was looking at. So there is the original printout off the teletype machine of the mission order. And things I learned, like the mission order would come in at, I don't know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, for engine start at 7 o'clock in the morning. So to think about all this stuff that the guys had to do. So the mission planning, and then to get that information out to, so the ordnance guys had to get all the bombs that are specified, the fuses and the timing of the fuses specified, and get those delivered to the plane. The fuel guys had to do the fuel thing. The bomb site guys had to bring the bomb sites out. And I mean, it's incredible all the stuff that had to happen all throughout the night for this mission. And so, yeah, I learned a lot of that stuff. But yeah, so there were a lot of questions that came up, and it's like, yeah, let's go find out. There's a question about dropping smoke bombs, you know, because the lead aircraft had the best bombardier up there, and he would drop bombs, and they would have smoke markers later on in the war, which is a phosphorus filled bomb in the bottom, and it would go out, and then everybody would see that. Or actually, we talked to Martin Raber, but World War II bombardier, 8th Air Force bombardier, still alive. And he said that the other planes would have to fly up, and as soon as they were next to that smoke, they would drop their bombs so that they weren't spread out. It's so much stuff we learned. It was incredible. Things I'd heard about the B-17 with the gunner, the F model with the waist guns right across from each other, how they would interfere. Well, they ended up staggering the waist windows to resolve that problem. But to see it come to life, to see these gunners, how they were completely across from each other and how they're going to, you know, do their dance. Plus with each had 4 cords going straight up above them. So you had oxygen, headphones, microphones, and heated suit stuff all coming down. It's interesting to see it come to life and to see, you know, how it really looks. It's one thing to read about, to see it come to life on set was just, it was spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's beautiful. I was wondering, in terms of, you know, watching the production, right? I mean, like you said, like, you will never see the way that movies or series or TV shows are made. And it's true. Like, even though I am in the world of film, I have been for a long time, you know, it's every time I see a film or a series, it's really hard not to imagine how a certain shot was done. Like, I really have to knock myself out of it, right? But it's just a natural tendency that comes in. What do you remember, a specific scene? Well, I don't want to talk about a scene unless it's not aired. So any specific moment that stood out for you or stands out for you even now during the entire production, without giving away anything, that you're still like, wow, that's just crazy the way it was done, or you appreciate the art more?
Yeah, there's a lot of different scenes that come to mind.
Let's say from the first 4 episodes, because they've already been aired, so
yeah, well, like,
we can
one
talk
of them
about.
Was where the nose was shot up, and they were gonna end up, well, they wanted to lighten up the aircraft, so they're throwing everything out possible. And normally the bomb site is, we've got, you know, pretty good weight to it. It's about 40 pounds. So, you know, often that was tossed out. And so they were going to do that. So you toss that out through the hatch there up in the nose, but it's like the nose had been completely shot out. So why not try and push this thing out the glass nose right there? And that's what they ended up doing. Some of those things that, yeah, we learned about and ended up kind of like adapting the scene to make it a little more authentic and a little more detailed. The, you know, teaching Raf Law about, you know, to do what Lemons did, you know, with the magnetos, you know, adjusting the points in the magneto with the feeler gauge and the screwdriver. And this is how we do it. We practice on the bench and then put it up in there. And it's like, I was watching that, going, yeah, turned out pretty good. He did a really good job. And then to see comments online, I got comments from one guy who's a really big Warbird restorer down in Australia, you know, saying, "What the? I did not expect the feeler gauges. Well done. That's a great little detail. But that's what this series is all about. It's all these little details that I've been kind of highlighting some of those on Facebook, but these little details add up. I mean, it's so incredible. It's the same kind of stuff in Band of Brothers, you know, all the neat little detail stuff that makes it what it is, you know, it makes it so special. And for people that are recognizing a lot of that stuff, and it's really rewarding to see that. But it's all in the details, I think, and people see
100%. I mean, even if you hire someone to renovate your home, and it's funny you mentioned that because, like, you know, you look at, like, if they've redone your room or the entire basement or whatever it is, you will look at that as a whole. But if they've got the baseboard not painted properly or the chip is coming off, it bothers the hell out of you, right? Because it's all in the details. Everything is in the details. And that the details make up the grand picture, essentially. Like, that's how important details are. And you mentioned Band of Brothers, exactly same thing with Saving Private Ryan. The bullets flying through at the Omaha Beach, you know, the opening sequence, and you hear the bullets sounds. Those little details make a huge impact. And that's exactly with Masters of the Year. Like, you know, when they show you all the, you know, in the older films, like, you'll barely see the control panel of a plane, like, you know, from the 80s or 90s or even early 2000s. They will not spend that much time on it because it's just a film, or, you know, it's not that important. But again, watching those, everything, the mechanics and, you know, the controls and the machinery gun and everything, the bombs going down, even though they were visuals, it just makes a huge impact. 100%.
It sure does. And we're all working together on that too. I remember, you know, we're all working on the monitors, and I had my own monitor to carry around with me, but looking at the big monitors too, we're all like watching. It's like with costume guys, you know, or say, hey, look, you know, that oxygen mask strap is messed up, or they on the parachute harnesses, there's these straps that were always come loose. They always, you know, bumping on things. So we're helping each other out. Hey, what about this? And watch this. Adding in the details. And you know, again, about the film stuff, they play like crazy. Like, they made tons of 50 caliber spent brass. They made a bunch of them out of rubber so that, you know, the
Wow.
guys, you know, roll, you know, slip and fall on them, so that they would squish. They had a whole bunch of that stuff, but they made it, they planned for it, but then when it gets down to production, it's like, well, where is it? You know, it's not in there. So it was fun to kind of like help some of that stuff go. One of the scenes where you know, it's after the battle, and there's supposed to be spent shells and links all over, and I can't see any in the camera. And they said, well, we put some in there. I said, well, we need a lot. And he said, well, you know, I already put some in. So I get out a picture showing that, you know, these things are up to your ankles almost, in the fuselage or up in the nose, because each gun is shooting 10, 12 bullets a second. So 10 shells and 10 links are coming out of that gun. That stuff went all over the place, and it's a neat effect. And so to see, you know, the final sequences, you know, those shells and all over, it's like, oh, cool. You know, that kind of detail really makes a big difference. And then you read about comments, you know, people saying how Crosby had to, you know, wipe the shells off of his maps on his table because that gun is right there above it. You know, that's great stuff in my book. I just love that stuff.
Yeah, no, it's so
And
true.
then.
I'm gonna go. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. But
No.
everybody, all the departments, they all wanted and strived to go to that level of detail. I mean, everybody was so into it, and it was like that was their mandate. It's thousands of people working towards this common goal is incredible. To see all these people just going, you know, doing their job and to get it done, you know, it's just like, yeah, it was really neat to see.
Well, I was talking to you about this to Colleen Atwood and the costume designer, and maybe another, somebody else I was talking to on a podcast, not about this series, about another film that they worked on. And it's so true, like, you know, so I come from, and I've said this on this podcast so many times, and I just have to say it because to give context, I come from a military family, right? My dad served the army back home in Pakistan for 30 years, and I know exactly how the way film sets work. It's literally like a hierarchy in military. Like, that's exactly, like, you have a certain job and your common goal is, you know, to win against the enemy or to finish the film, and everybody's doing their part, and they have a supervisor who has a supervisor, a senior officer, et cetera, et cetera. And it is so true to the military model, and it works like a beautiful, you know, It's amazingly how it's orchestrated and how it turns out, provided it's, a good relationship with people on the sets. It's marvelous to see. I mean, I am from the industry, and when I see it, it's just mesmerizing to see every little piece is being done individually with the other counterparts not knowing about it, and then you see it as one big whole when you see it on the big screen.
Steven was very helpful to me because, again, I'm an airplane guy. Huh? I'm not a,
Yeah.
a movie guy. Learning, but in doing what I'm doing, I ruffled some feathers for sure. And Steven says, it's everybody is very protective of their lane in the pool.
Yeah.
And here I am doing cannonballs in the deep end, ruffling feathers and things, but for the most part, everybody really worked well together to get things done and to have this kind of yes attitude and to make it happen. And so, I knew the guys that were getting the certain jobs done, so I could go talk to them about, this and this and fixing something or adding something, whatever. And it worked out well. It's like the guys down in the trenches. But I noticed a disconnect too from the planning and the art department and the storyboards and all that kind of stuff to when it actually is there getting filmed. Some of those details can get kind of lost. And so I was trying to bring some of those details back in. And but yeah, another guy told me, he says, yeah, a lot of times on set, you can be at each other's throats and want to just, gouge his eyes out. And then at the after party you're hugging
Yeah, that's just the nature of business, right? Because
So I said,
it's literally like, again, like I said, in the military or Air Force or Navy, like your job is the mission is to complete something, and you're gonna get at each other's, neck every now and then. But as long as it doesn't affect the final outcome, that's all that matters. Then you're just, you've achieved what you wanted to achieve, and you're back to buddies again.
it's
Stephen mentioned this to me, and this is how I, learned about you. I want to know if that actually happens. It's just on the side. He was talking about that how, you were talking to him before the series came out or before even certain things were done. Where I think it was the front part of the plane, it never catches fire. Was that right? Is that the conversation that you had?
Yeah, and that's the one thing I mentioned. It's just cracking up about that story that you told.
So.
Yeah, he wrote an email with pictures and examples and of the fire and the engine fire. And Hollywood always has, fire coming out of the front of the engine, out of the nacelle and going back. And what I said was, there's lots of places where fire can come out, but it doesn't come out the front of the engine like that. It's 200 miles an hour wind blowing, so the fire, and there's no fuel up there, that kind of thing. So that's what I was trying to get across. There's great places for fire to come out all over, but please don't let it come out the front of the engine. And that cracked me up how he was saying, yeah, well, I'm sure Ty's probably sitting at home throwing stuff at the screen and.
But did that, not that you threw stuff at the screen, but were you, did it bother you? Because it's your world, right? And it's not, if it's not being portrayed. And I know in Hollywood, in filmmaking, stories and liberties take place. But did that bother you? Like, did that annoy the hell out of you when you saw that?
There are a few things like that, and that was one thing where we see smoke and fire coming out of the front of the engine nacelle. But and there's comment that the airplane guys online talk about that kind of stuff too. So yeah, there's people notice it. Like there was one time where one of the B-17s came into the studio from Abingdon, from the airfield, and they brought in and reassembled it, and the prop blades were. Of the 12 prop blades, nine of them were in negative pitch, meaning they were kind of backwards. And I noticed, I
Okay.
go, oh, that's something we should fix. And so I went up to the person that was in charge of that and got a lot of pushback. No, that's fine. Or they were filmed that way out there for continuity. We need to leave it that way. It's like, hold on, I'm showing you that it's wrong and it's a kind of a big thing. So you want to fix it? And it was like, no, nobody's going to notice that. Yeah, I think any pilot, anybody who built a model airplane, anybody with any kind of connection would probably knows. And there've been a few that have slipped through. But it's interesting to see some of the pushback you get. It's like, I think it goes back to that lane in the pool, sort of thing. But yeah, some of those discussions were a little mind-boggling. And
Well,
that kind of stuff, I like, throwing stuff at the screen, like, God dang it. I wish I was there for post-production too. That would have been It would
Yeah.
have helped out, but yeah.
I think there's a lot of egos, right, that you have to deal with. That's one thing in the film industry. There's a lot of egos. And right. And that sometimes is okay, but sometimes it's for the wrong reasons. But it is what it is. I mean, unfortunately you can't have a perfect outcome in every scenario. But I did want to ask you. You kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, if there's a specific example that you can think of, you're talking about the certain storyboards, that there was a disconnect between the storyboards and what was really done and everything. And sometimes, when you make concept arts and stuff and it goes through a process, even storyboards, things change on the set. Was there a specific example that you can think of where that disconnect happened, like in terms of a scene that's already been aired in one of the episodes?
Nothing real big comes to mind. I know
Okay.
Carrie was in charge of the first or the director for the first four episodes, and he was, I would say, very artistic, and he would change things a lot because something would, some impression would pop in his mind, and he'd want to make it look better, and would change some things. And it was sometimes we'd have to scramble to come up with ways to kind of make that work, or to make sure it's reasonable authenticity wise. So yeah, like some of the yeah, I think like the diving to put out the fire scene, or some of the stuff in the storyboards for the Greenland landing scene, it worked out really well. Austin's doing a great job. Flying looking like you're in a heavy, nasty crosswind. But then I think in post-production, some of the details that we put in got rearranged a little bit. So yeah, that was, but that's just part of the deal. And again, I wish I could have helped in post-production on some of that stuff, just to give a little bit of, or to give them some understanding of what we were doing on set, trying to create. And but yeah, it turned out great. Really
That's
did.
good. How has the traffic on your museum, has it been affected ever since the series came out? People become more aware of it, people popping in more. Has there been any kind of impact in that sense?
Yeah, we have a it's a little small museum, and we're only open a limited amount now. We're going to start increasing our hours, so we don't have a lot of foot traffic come in, but we'll have special meetings. We look at Warbird meetings, or we've been having meetings where we come in on Friday nights and watch the latest Masters episode. So that's been fun. We've noticed more interest in the bomber camp kind of thing, which is good, and we're hoping that we'll get lots of folks signed up for bomber camp. So but other than that, yeah, we've had a lot of questions, a lot of people asking things, and I've been making some Facebook posts with some of the photos of some of the details in the background, and that's seemed to be pretty popular too. So it's been fun.
That's awesome. I wonder, I mean, Tom Cruise is like a very big on flying, right? I think he has his own, does he have his own P-51, if not mistaken? I'm not sure. Maybe he has another one. But he has an old World War II plane, which they use in Top Gun at the end, Top Gun Maverick. Have you seen Top Gun Maverick?
Sure have, yeah.
Okay, so the plane at the end when it flies into the sunset, what was that? Is that, I'm not really that good with names. So was that a P-51 or no?
Yeah, it is a P-51 Mustang, and that's his personal airplane. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
So do you see him ever coming to your facility? Because I mean, it's something that is his interest, right? Like, do you see that happening in terms of celebrities trying to come and try to sort of feel the experience of what you guys do?
Oh, I kind of doubt that that would happen.
Okay.
They're all certainly welcome to. We've had some interest in bomber camp, like wanting to do kind of a TV series kind of stuff or whatever associated with bomber camp, and we've done special kind of events with them to make that happen. I frankly I'd love to get Austin and Callum up to see, hey. You want to try out a B-17, get him up in the cockpit and actually get him to fly one. Yeah, it was kind of fun watching Callum on I think it was The Late Show talking about they asked him, says, hey, you've got a lot of training now. Do you think you can, if there's a problem up in the cockpit, you could get up and fly? He's like, no, absolutely not. And Austin was like, yeah, I think I could do it. So it would be kind of fun to get those guys up in a B-17. I just have to, figure out how to ask them, I guess. But it would be good to have them come to bomber camp and go play.
Would they be they showed interest during the production that they would want to eventually do that or afterwards?
They didn't in particular. But Sawyer Spielberg did. He was asking about, hey, how do I get flying lessons? How do I learn to fly? And his grandfather was
Yeah,
in,
yeah.
and that's where their interest comes in. So I'd love to get Sawyer up too. He was super enthusiastic about that stuff. I think more so than anybody really.
Well,
So.
it runs in the family, right? Plus, his dad has made so many, World War II related films and series and historically and all that stuff. So it runs in the family, and it would be really cool to have these actors that ones that you work to have to go in B-17 and actually fly it or co-pilot it, or that'd be really, really awesome. I mean that would really be cool to even capture on camera just to see
Yeah, I
them
would
in that in them.
love to make that happen. Yeah. So, yeah, if you interview them for your show, ask them if they want to come out and fly a B-17.
We'll try. We'll try. We're trying to work on a few. We actually approached Sawyer Spielberg, but I think he was busy with other stuff, so that didn't turn out. So we're always trying to interview different people. It just depends on their schedule. Everybody moves on to different productions and stuff. So, but one person I really want to do and is John Orloff, right? And having him on would be really, really cool. Looking
Yeah,
forward to
sure.
that to see if that happens.
Oh my God, he's kind of the father of this whole thing too, putting the script together and his Bible, all the notes. Yeah, he'd be a great interview for you.
Yeah, it would be awesome. I would love to know, where do you see yourself, or would you like to? Because I think Masters of the Air, what Saving Private Ryan did in 1998, it started this traffic of World War movies, whether it's World War II mainly, but then later World War I movies came out, a lot of them. And I feel that's exactly what's going to happen with Masters of the Air. It's going to start all this trend, in terms of World War II films or World War II Air Force films or even contemporary Air Force stuff. Do you see yourself offering your time and your services as a consultant on future projects? Is that something that you would like to revisit, considering you enjoyed what you did on Masters of the Year?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to get involved in that kind of stuff. I think I kind of bring a lot in from a wide variety of World War II aviation, Army and Navy kind of stuff. So I'd love to help out with that kind of thing.
Would that something that you would, because I know I spoke to Captain Dale Dye twice. Once I spoke to him last year about Saving Private Ryan and Bad and Brothers, and once I spoke to him just before the series began, which we haven't put up the episode yet. And he started back in platoon days, on the Oliver Stone film, and Born on 4th of July with Tom Cruise and what's his name, Charlie Sheen. And then he's still at it. So I'm just wondering if that's something you see yourself doing throughout your career, if their opportunities present themselves while running the museum at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. The museum is kind of low key, and doing these kind of shows, it was a lot of fun, and it was great to be able to contribute so much to something like that. I also think in Masters, if I wish I could have been involved earlier, probably would have saved them a lot of money for some of the production stuff, because some of the things were kind of going in kind of an odd direction that wasn't very authentic, or and then when we started talking about that, then things changed, and I feel like it could have saved them a lot of money in production, just helping to fix some of that stuff if I was involved in the planning. Because I'd walk on set and it's like, oh wow, they had this one rig that they made, beautiful rig, made to for the fuselage to rotate completely around in a circle, and I asked, well, what's this for? And they're like, well, this for the spin sequence. It's like, oh geez, hold on, it. Went into the dynamics of a spin and what that's involved. I said, do you guys picture like the crew, like socks in a dryer, kind of like tumbling around in a circle? I said, yeah, exactly. No, it doesn't do that. That kind of stuff. Who knows? I mean, I'm just shooting from the hip, but they ended up not doing that big rotation thing, but they just, rolled up on a side, like they'd be pinned on the side of the airplane, something more authentic. So yeah, I see if I was, I think if I was involved in more of the answering a lot of the questions early on in production or that kind of thing, and provide the documentation that supports it, that it would probably be more efficient for him money wise. And I know I could help out in earlier and all throughout. So yeah, I'd love to do that kind of stuff.
Cool. That's awesome. Just as a little plug in, little plug, I'd say that in terms of your museum, just talk about what's at your museum. What can people experience when they come down there? Whatever you offer, because I'd love for people to check out your museum, and I will be coming down there for sure whenever I'm in California next time, 100%.
Yeah, sounds good. So it's a Stockton Field Aviation Museum, and it's a small hangar, and looks like what you see behind us. And we're gearing it up towards teaching people about kind of just what we did on Masters, but about the aircrew. So bombardiers, navigators, gunners, radio operators, pilots. We've got a B-17 cockpit over there, so we can teach people about all these different things. And so we do bomber camp, which is once a year, where we fly a B-17 and we teach people all day long how to be a bombardier navigator, all that kind of stuff. And then we actually load up dummy bombs in a B-17, and we train you in the ball turret right here on the ground, and then you actually get to ride in one in flight. Go back to the tail gunner's position. We have a blank firing 50 caliber gun in the waist that you can shoot. So it's an amazing experience. And you, with an Norden bomb sight, you get to drop a bomb and try and hit the target. It's really an incredible event, and it's a lot of fun. And what we've now started to do is a bomber camp on demand. So throughout the year, if you just want to come and learn that, you know, what your grandfather did or any of that kind of stuff, either ground crew, you know, the wrecker truck, how they would, you know, pick up an airplane, or the bomb truck, how you'd load the bombs, or how you're, you know, you flew in the cockpit in the B-17 and go through the procedures and stuff like that to, you know, run the ball turret. That kind of thing. So you can schedule that pretty much any day with us, and come out and learn all that stuff hands-on. It's like the Smithsonian opening up their collection for you to touch and play and hear it run and all that kind of stuff. So that's what's kind of special about it. But you want to learn about the Norden bomb site, we can even go up and drop bombs. There's also, the possibility. So yeah, it's a blast. Bombercamp.org, shameless plug. But
No, that's good. The people need to know. I mean, you
you
know,
should
in
come out
terms
to
of
bomber.
the, I will. When is the bomber camp? Like, not the on demand one, the other one.
Yeah, it's
Is
May
it like
3rd.
on?
Yeah,
Okay, so
May
it's around
3rd.
the corner.
Yeah, if we fill up, we're gonna additional flights will be in May 2nd and maybe May 4th. We'll see how many, you know, people come to show up. But yeah, we got a bunch of people signed up already. So yeah, come on out.
Awesome. And for people's knowledge, unless you don't want to reveal it because it's different package and stuff, what kind of pricing does it start at to experience that? Just so people, if they want to come in, what should they expect?
It's $3,500 for the whole day experience. You come in 0700, we bring you in to our place. We give you the coveralls, and you get drill, and then there's instruction before lunch where you get classes on and hands-on experience on the gunnery and bombardier navigation stuff. And then we have a World War II lunch, and then we go out and we start loading up the bombs. With all the vehicles out there at the B-17, there's tents and all the equipment that you can think of is all around there in this great little revetment. And you learn about the crew positions, and then we go up and fly a mock mission. And the people rotate around. Like I say, you get to shoot the 50 caliber gun in the waist, sit in the ball turret, and you know, amazing place to ride in that ball turret. And then you can also watch the bombs drop. We have a bomb bay full of dummy bombs, and each student will come up and drop a bomb, and you can watch them go and hit the target that we have out in this ranch, this big ranch that's out east of here. So it's great. And you come back and debrief and go to the Oak Club, and it's an amazing experience. It really is. But yeah, full day. It's a living history, World War II, immersive experience that people come back year after year too. It's just a real special event.
That sounds to me like medieval times on steroids. You know,
Yeah.
it's basically completely you're living in the 1940s. And how many people show up every year, roughly last year? What was the traffic
You
like?
know, we used to have with the Collins Foundation, we had a B-17 and B-24 that we would fly. And we had, I don't know, we had 2 days worth of students doing two missions each, and we were even hauling some people out to the bombing range so they could watch it from that side. But it varies from year to year, depending on how many people find out about it. But we'll have, you can rent the whole plane out if you bring in a, a group of 8 people. You can rent the whole plane out yourself. We've had folks, just a guy and his brother rented the whole plane out so they could play and drop all the bombs themselves. So
Wow.
yeah.
That is so cool. That is so cool. Thank you so much, Ty, for joining. I really, really appreciate it. I really had a great time learning about your experience, learning about what you do a little more than I knew before, but I would love to learn more. And, we'll meet in person 100%. I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Love to show you around. Let me know what you want to see, and I'll have it out ready for you.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Ty. You have yourself a great day and enjoy Master of the Year.
Thank you so much.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for watching and listening. Don't forget to subscribe, like, share, and comment, and do come back for another episode. Until then, have a great day.